This is The Guardian.
On a Friday night in April, I was in Manhattan in New York City in Carnegie Hall at a very exclusive event, invite only.
Jenny Kleeman, a features writer for The Guardian, was in the Big Apple for a birthday party. And the birthday girl, Kathy Tai, was providing the entertainment herself. In fact, she'd even hired out the venue for the occasion.
She was wearing this pink, shimmering gown with a cape on it. It was a Jenny Packham gown. I looked it up. It costs about £4,000. Playing this Steinway grand piano on stage at Carnegie Hall, backed by an orchestra. She was playing this Sassons piece. She was playing it very beautifully, but slightly mechanically and very seriously. And then she stood up and bowed. Then everyone in the orchestra and all of us sang Happy Birthday. It was a bit awkward and a bit weird. And we all went upstairs to have a champagne reception on one of the upper floors. And when I was at this champagne reception, I started talking to people, and almost everybody I spoke to had never met Kathy or had only just met Kathy.
Jenny doesn't usually go to strangers' birthday parties halfway across the world, but she's wanted to interview Kathy Tai for a really long time, because Kathy isn't just any 30-year-old. She is the self-described biotech Barbie. A serial entrepreneur who wants to edit human embryos to make healthier babies.
What we're deciding is whether our species will use the most precise biological tool ever developed to prevent suffering, or whether we will let fear, dressed up as caution, make that decision for us.
But gene editing could also create designer babies, taller babies, cleverer babies, babies with lighter skin. The technology has the power to alter the trajectory of human evolution forever. And when things go wrong, the consequences could scarcely be more serious.
Germline editing has very serious safety concerns that could have irreversible consequences. We simply lack the tools to...
We're living in this world of hyper-optimization. We're all supposed to be hacking ourselves, and now we're hacking our babies too. I think the dial has shifted on what we are prepared to do to optimize our offspring, or what some people are prepared to do.
From The Guardian, I'm Helen Pitt. Today in Focus, baby hacking and the biological arms race. Jenny, welcome back to Today in Focus. Great to see you.
Very lovely to be back here.
So you're back in London after what sounds like an incredibly glamorous trip to New York to celebrate Kathy Tai's 30th birthday. And I don't remember playing a grand piano in concert to celebrate my 30th. I think I was in some dodgy pub in Hackney for mine. What's her backstory? How has she got to this position? What qualifications has she got? And how can she already afford to hire out the Carnegie Hall for her 30th birthday?
She comes from a Chinese family. She wouldn't tell me exactly where she was born. She said it was just outside of Beijing. Her family moved to Canada when she was very young, 4 or 5. And from what I can tell, she was a really, really good student. She's clearly brilliant at the piano, very, very academic, was winning vast amounts of money in science fairs as a teenager. She had her first scientific paper published when she was 16. She likes to say that a lot. And in previous reporting about her, it always says, oh, she had her first scientific paper published before she was 16. But I actually looked up what paper this was, and it's in a journal for school children. So while she did have a scientific paper published, there's a bit of spin there. And that's something you need to bear in mind all the time with Kathy Tai. There's always a bit of spin. She got in trouble once for missing a biology class because she was preparing for one of these fairs where she'd win lots of money. And her teacher was angry with her for missing the class. And she asked her teacher, well, what scientific papers have you published? I've had a paper published. She went to university when she was very young, and she dropped out. at age 18 because she won a fellowship offered by the very famous billionaire Peter Thiel. It's a Thiel fellowship. At the time, it was a $100,000 fellowship. Now it's $250,000. Mm. He gives these fellowships to people aged under 22 who agree to drop out of university and build something. And it comes from this, I guess it's an idea that smart people are wasting their time at university. They could do better if they went into the real world. And she says, from speaking to her, that was clearly the formative experience for her. And it's given her this very, she says, useful irreverence, this sense of not wanting to go along with the orthodoxy, challenging things. She was on Forbes's list of 30 most interesting individuals under 30 when she was 22. She set up lots of companies. And so, yes, she is, as she calls herself, a serial entrepreneur and proud of it.
Okay, so she is clearly a very bright spark. She's very ambitious. But nothing demonstrates the level of her ambition, I think, than the last 18 months, does it?
Well, I have to say that since the beginning of 2025, it's been quite a ride for Kathy Tai.
So how did I end up here? Why am I in this wonderful suite, but in New York City with no home, traveling from city to city? What am I doing here? How did I end up here? Record scratch, freeze frame. How did I end up in this situation?
She started it by announcing her first ever biotech startup, which was a company that sought to genetically engineer exotic pets for wealthy pet owners. And then she moved to Beijing, or at least she tried to move to Beijing, because she fell in love with He Zhongkui, who is probably one of the most notorious scientists in the world.
So a Chinese scientist helped create the world's first genetically edited babies. He is going to jail. Mm. His name is He Jiankui of China. He is going to be in prison for 3 years for carrying out what the Chinese government says were illegal medical practices.
And following his release from prison, she was communicating with him. She met him, fell in love with him, tried to move to Beijing to be with him. But when she was on her layover in Manila, she was informed that the Chinese authorities would not be allowing her into Beijing. So she spent a while in limbo, trying to work out what was going on. Eventually, she moved back to Toronto, which is where she's originally from. She's from Canada. Her marriage to He Zhongkui dissolved. They were separated.
Later on, we're going to talk more about this short-lived husband and why his work was so controversial. But spoiler alert, it involves some real-life human twins. But can you first tell us about Kathy's latest company, Origin Genomics?
Kathy Tai wants to use germline gene editing to stop serious diseases, genetically inherited diseases. And what germline gene editing is it's basically editing the genes of eggs or very, very early stage embryos. And you use a gene editing tool called CRISPR to go in and change genes. And she says that if you change the genes of the very earliest forms of human life, then those changes will be replicated in all the cells as they divide and reproduce. And you can essentially prevent really serious diseases like sickle cell anemia, like Huntington's diseases, diseases that cause a lot of suffering.
Just how new is this technology, really? Because all the listeners might remember Dolly the sheep, Dolly the cloned sheep. I think she came into the world in the lab in 1996. And there is already embryo screening, isn't there, for exactly the sort of diseases, these hereditary diseases that you've just listed.
Yeah, I mean, this is a very specific technology. This is not cloning. This is not screening. So what happens with screening is you see if the genes are there.
Right.
What happens with cloning is that you replicate the genes that are there. Gene editing involves changing, deleting or modifying the genes that are there. And that's been around for about 15 years. This technology has been possible. And from what I understand, that it's not actually difficult to do. The problem is the tools have made mistakes in the past, and it's called mosaicism. They've caused unintended changes, consequences, that genetic changes that aren't quite what's intended. But apparently the newest generation of these tools can be quite precise. So it's quite a new field, relatively speaking, and it hasn't, well, we know that it's only been used to our knowledge once before, and that was in human beings, and that was with He Zhongkui. Because at the moment, the rules are you're not allowed to use gene editing on an embryo, a human embryo, older than 14 days of gestation, or one that has a chance of one day being implanted and being born as a human being.
Okay, well, so in labs around the world, there are plenty of molecular biologists, are there, who are experimenting on these very, very young embryos, but nobody's been allowed to actually take it to its, well, I was going to say natural conclusion. Maybe it's not a natural conclusion of a baby, apart from, as you've already told us, Kathy's short-lived husband.
Yes, experiments are going on all the time. They're also going on quite a lot with animals. All over the world, these experiments are happening, although actually they're not so much happening in universities. In America, there is a moratorium on doing this research in universities. And this is Kathy's argument. Because universities can't get funding to do this research, It's only private companies that can do it. So she's saying that she's flying the flag for science by having a private company that is doing this research that has the potential to transform the lives of people who are the carriers of these very serious genetic diseases.
I mean, clearly the potential is enormous. And has that been recognised by venture capital companies? Is there a lot of money being poured into this kind of research?
Well, some of the most wealthy people in the world are pouring their money into this kind of research. Mm. Sam Altman, the CEO of OpenAI, who owned ChatGPT, and his husband, they have invested in a company called Preventive, which is another gene editing startup that seeks to prevent the same sorts of diseases that Kathy is seeking to prevent. The CEO of Coinbase is also an investor in Preventive, and he's spoken quite openly, this guy called Brian Armstrong, about what might be possible in the future. He calls it a Gattaca stack. Gattaca is this famous movie from the 90s with Ethan Hawke in it about a kind of dystopian future where people are genetically engineered. He says in the future, people will have babies using embryo selection, gene editing, artificial wombs, various other technologies that we'll be using to make our families.
Right. Okay. So Kathy's far from the only person trying to make this a reality. So is her biggest challenge then convincing the regulators that this is ethical and that it isn't going to lead to horrendous consequences that you don't have to be a genetic expert to be able to imagine?
Yes, Kathy is on a mission to make gene editing acceptable. And I think that's part of the reason why she invited me to her birthday party, is she knows that she needs to at least be seen to be being open and transparent, open with the public, engaging with ethicists and in public debates, and in a constant dialogue with regulators. And that's her biggest challenge at the moment, is to get these norms changed and to get research board approval for the work that she's doing.
So you went to meet Kathy. It sounds like it wasn't hard to persuade her to open up to you. If she's on a PR mission to try to persuade people that this isn't as dangerous as it sounds.
I think it was quite difficult to get her to say anything at all, because I think what she wanted was the publicity, but she didn't want to answer difficult questions. And there were a lot of difficult questions that I wanted to put to her.
She invited the wrong journalist then, didn't she?
I think so. And she looked genuinely uncomfortable during a lot of our conversation, particularly when I asked her about her marriage to He Zhengkui. But there were other questions that she should have been more comfortable answering. When you go and interview people, you expect them to be able to answer basic questions. How many people work for you? Who funds you? And she kept saying, well, I'm not at liberty to discuss that at the moment. Our funders are extremely motivated. I've got pioneers working for me, but I'm unfortunately unable to name any of them at the moment, which doesn't really strike me as being very transparent. I mean, it wasn't the kind of response you'd expect from someone who's saying, hey, I'm an open book.
Yeah. And you piqued my interest when you said that one of her earlier ventures was genetically modifying animals. Tell me about that.
She had a company called the Los Angeles Project, which sought to biohack pets. So making glow-in-the-dark bunnies.
What? Why would you want to glow-in-the-dark bunnies? You didn't lose them in the dark.
Well, I guess if you're a Los Angeles pet owner who has everything, why not have a glow-in-the-dark phosphorescent bunny? Phosphorescent bunny rabbits. She said she was interested in using genetic engineering to turn horses into unicorns, get them to grow a nice big horn. Also, other things slightly more practical, hypoallergenic cats. It sounded like a fun project. I don't know how far she got with it, because when I asked her, she wouldn't tell me. She clearly thought it was a lot of fun. She said it was a useful way of understanding genetic engineering, which is what she'd always wanted to do. And then I thought, oh yeah, obviously you would try this out on animals first, because there aren't the restrictions on animals that there are on human beings. And when I asked her this, when I put that to her, she said, I'm not familiar with what the animal consent process is. And I said, surely there is no animal consent process, because animals can't consent to being experimented on. And then she said, yes, I'd rather we didn't talk about this. I don't remember exactly what was going on with that company.
Yeah. And after that project, what did she do next?
She went to China. That's where she met up with He Zhengkui, who she had interviewed before. There's a very strange video on Kathy's YouTube channel of her interviewing him.
That's great. Thank you. Informally, as an individual outside of science, what do you like to do in your free time? What are your hobbies and what are you passionate about?
Well, I love playing golf. I also enjoy...
She got together with him. I think he told her he was in love with her and it was a bit of a surprise for her. But then she fell in love with him. They got married. She told me they weren't legally married, but there was certainly a wedding. There are wedding photographs all over both of their social media. They had matching wedding bands custom made that were DNA double helixes.
Of course.
She was living in Los Angeles at the time. She went back to the US to pack up all of her stuff. Everything was in storage. Everything was going to be shipped over to Beijing. But then the Chinese government got in the way and she was visibly squirming when I was asking her about him. She looked so uncomfortable. She was going red in the face. I asked her if the only reason why their marriage didn't survive was because they couldn't be together for logistical reasons. And she said yes. So I think if she could have moved to China, she would have. She was really in admiration of him. She saw him as a heretic, you know, someone who is a teal fellow who has been incubated in a culture of, you know, healthy disrespect for authority is great for science, is great for the world. Someone like him who would break the rules and create the world's first gene edited babies. It sounds very appealing. But when you know the details of what he actually did, and I think most people don't know and don't ask many questions, he's actually a very, very dubious figure.
Okay, and can you actually just break down for us exactly what he did?
This all came to light in 2018 when he gave a presentation about his experiment, and he called it an experiment, which was the creation of twin girls, Lulu and Nana, who will be, I think, around 9 years old now. So Lulu and Nana's father was HIV positive, and what He Zhengkui did was he tried to introduce what is a naturally occurring genetic mutation that gives people natural immunity to HIV. Mm-hmm. This protein is responsible for lots of other stuff as well, not just immunity to HIV. We don't know what the consequences of that would be. So he tried to do this in these two embryos and he failed. According to his own data, he failed. Mm-hmm. So he caused unknown changes in both of the embryos and he knew this. And yet he still allowed both embryos to be implanted into Lulu and Nana's mother and for Lulu and Nana to be born. What most people understand is he gave these twins immunity to HIV, but he didn't. And also this was not a disease like Huntington's. They weren't carriers of a genetic abnormality that needed to be created. He was giving them, or trying to give them, a protection against a disease that they might contract because they were living, sharing a household with someone who was HIV positive. Mm-hmm. So this is not a necessary life-saving procedure by any stretch of the imagination.
You can see why he was nicknamed China's Dr. Frankenstein, can't you?
Yeah, I mean, he was, you know, really experimenting with human life, suturing together different bits of genetic code and hoping for the best. Even when he knew that what he had tried to do had failed, he still wanted to see the outcome. And nobody knows what's happened to them. There's a lot of secrecy about it. He hasn't published any information. The Chinese government doesn't want people to know. So the fate of Lulu and Nana is a complete mystery.